All right, Dae O'Malley, thank you very much for coming on to the show today. It's been a long time coming. I've wanted to get you on the show for a while now, so thank you very much.
Okay, you're welcome.
So I've watched your YouTube videos. I've read a lot of your Facebook posts. I know that you have over 18 books that you've authored that are in our local library and even on Amazon. I've listened to your radio programs. Most of them are about the history of this area, and it's obvious that you are a devout historian. You are a smart guy. And I'm just curious, first of all, where did that all start? Where did this, not obsession, but fascination with the history of the area begin for you?
So I was born and raised here on a farm out north of town, and my father passed away, and my mother spent 3 winters in the farmhouse by herself, and she said, "That's enough, I'm moving to town." So that farmhouse had been in the family for 5 generations, and had 5 generations worth of junk stored in it, like up in the attic. So it took us several months to clean. We ended up cleaning out the house, selling it. And she moved to town. Well, I ended up with all the family genealogy type stuff. So I ended up doing the genealogy thing and traced the ancestors all the way back to Europe. And I ended up making scrapbooks for my siblings in and captured, scanned all the images in and gave them copies of all the images. Well, then about that time, somebody came along and said, "Well, you should sign up for this Facebook group that they started about Fairbury history." I said, "Okay, fine." And well, the next thing you know, I end up being the main poster probably on the page on that. And then I started doing, I did about 30 radio spots with WJEZ in Pontiac.
Jeez, that happened quickly.
Yeah. And then I started writing books. And the next thing you know, that turns into like 20. Books on different topics. I've given talks to different civic groups around town. It just kept expanding. Got involved with our Echoes Museum here in Fairbury. I'm currently the vice president of that. Then I went to too many historical society meetings in Pontiac, and I ended up being president of that also. So that's where I'm at. The books, they've led to stuff you can't imagine, getting questions from around the country from different people. I got a call from a professor a few weeks ago. He's writing a new book about early Las Vegas. Well, he did some research and found out that 2 Fairbury boys helped start Las Vegas.
I've heard that, believe it or not.
He checks, probably at Amazon, he finds out, well, I've got information about them. So he was just tickled pink that I had all the research done for him on that side. He ended up sending me some really neat pictures of 2 houses in Fairbury from like 1915 and 1920.
Wow.
South of Dave's supermarket. And they still stand today. Huh. So he's using that. There's another guy writing a book about the USS Sullivan's, a ship in World War II. We had a guy disappear off of that ship. And I did a book about our World War II people, and one of the descendants asked me to include him in that book, which I did. Well, the next thing you know, my books are going out to Buffalo, New York, where that ship is actually at. It's a tourist-type thing now. And they set up a dedication area for him. And then another gentleman's writing a book about the history of that ship. Pretty famous ship in there. So you never know where this stuff goes to. I get questions all over the world.
So you said this kind of all started when your father passed away.
Yes.
Just curious, how old were you when that happened? Were you in your 30s or were you like a high school kid?
No. 50s.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
I see.
Yes.
So this fascination with history, is it relatively recent, I guess, like in the last couple decades or?
Yeah. I was just thinking back when we built this house in 1999, I refinished the basement, and it took me 6 months. You probably don't know what a console TV is.
Console TV? Is it the one with the knobs that you turn?
No, it's the great big cabinet that you had the TV in. I mean, these things are huge. Uh-huh. Somehow we had one left, and I stuck it down the basement, and I left it on the History Channel. Mm-hmm. And you know how the H comes up for History Channel? In those days, they called it the Hitler Channel because it was all World War II on there. So I listen every night and weekends to History Channel straight for 6 months. So obviously, I like history, so. Wow. You know, in high school, the bad news is they make you take the fourth stuff on the Constitution, which is fine. You need to take that. But if you would have just had a couple of sessions on local history, I think it would have prompted some interest. But then again, yeah, when you're
stuff that actually pertains to you in the right. world around you.
Correct. Mm-hmm. But when you're 16 or 18 years old, you think you're going to live forever. You're not too worried about history. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't seem like people get interested in history maybe till they hit about age 50.
Yeah.
And then they start getting interested in their past. And
you kind of said matter-of-factly that you just became kind of the most consistent poster on this historical mm-hmm. Facebook page about the history of the area. Next thing you know, you're on the radio for multiple segments talking about the history. Mm-hmm. And something that we haven't even mentioned that we might not talk too much about is these – you're an engineering major, correct?
Yes.
And you have these incredibly high quality wooden, I hate to even call them toys, these wooden contraptions, machines, really.
Yes.
And it's all very impressive. You seem like a guy, obviously you have some serious brain power, I would say, to construct those things, to know as much about the history of this area as you have, or that you, as you do,
yeah.
and to publish your own books, or to write your own books, I should say.
Yeah.
Are you the type of guy that once you get interested in something, you're full steam ahead? You're just totally invested in that thing? Or
yeah,
is that the wrong assumption?
Then I tend to focus on that particular project
mm-hmm.
and beat it to death till I get it done.
Rather
than spread my time trying to do 10 projects at once.
Yeah.
So my uncle told a story. Dale Dammer is my uncle. I'm actually named after him. He had a plumbing shop, so I worked a couple summers for him. And the first time I sweated copper pipes together, you take a torch and you melt solder mm-hmm. and you hook them together. I was totally fascinated. So that night after work, I stayed late in his shop and he comes out there to see what I'm doing. Well, here I've taken a joint and I took the hacksaw and I cut it in half just to see what it looked like. And later, my uncle says I knew that I lost him as a plumber then. He was way too curious for that. He's probably going to be an engineer, not a plumber.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And I feel like engineers, again, I don't really know what I'm talking about, but I feel like they're the type of guys that love tinkering with things, messing with things. They want to see what's on the inside of something,
right.
Take it apart, put it back together.
Well, when I was a kid on the farm, I would take the lawnmower apart, even though it had nothing wrong with it. I'd still take it apart and put it back together. Yeah, I did that.
So you have published a lot of work regarding the history of the area and beyond. I know that you have some work in, you've published some books about investing, retirement, mm-hmm. things of that nature.
Right.
So kind of a wide variety of things. Are people paying you to do this, or are these things just the product of your own interests and hobbies?
We are brought to you by Fairbury Furniture. Fairbury Furniture is a delightful furniture store in downtown Fairbury that sells all of the most stylish and comfortable furniture from all of your favorite brands at excellent prices. They're staffed with great people and everyone in this area loves them. So when you decide it's time to get some quality furniture, head nowhere else but the one and only Fairbury Furniture in downtown Fairbury, Illinois.
They're all my own interest. Financial planning was one of my early hobbies.
Hobbies, interesting.
Well, when I got out of school and started working, programmable calculators were just coming out. There were no PCs.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sitting there thinking, okay, I started working and I'm probably going to work 30 years. How do I end up with some money at the end of the 30 years for the show for all that effort, you know? So I took a adult ed class in Pontiac. Mm-hmm. And I graduated college, you know, engineering degree. But I learned quite a bit out of that class, and it kind of became a hobby of mine. And then the one thing that bothered me was I couldn't figure out which mutual fund to invest in.
Hmm.
I just picked three and I put money in them. But the next thing you know, they're not the best three anymore. So I went to got an MBA down at ISU, and you had to do a research paper for a finance class. And your professor had to approve it. First, so I went to him and I said, explain that. And I said, I'm going to figure out how to figure out ahead of time which fund's the best one. He says, boy, if you can figure that out, you'll get an A.
Hmm.
For that, go to it. So I did, and I discovered what's called index funds. And I did get an A on the paper. Uh-huh. And I used that technique, and it's very, very helpful to accumulate money.
Just could you explain to me, to a dum-dum like me when it comes to finance and investing, what exactly is a mutual fund? I mean, in as layman terms as you can do, and what is an index fund? I don't get what these things are. I have a little bit of money in an app called Robinhood in the stock market and in Bitcoin, but I don't really know what I'm doing at all. I just like to see the graph go up in my money.
So my son, he owns some shares in Amazon. He likes to brag how well Amazon's doing. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, what if you pool your money with 100 other people and you decide you go out and buy stock in 50 different companies? Well, that's a mutual fund in essence. Okay. They're buying a whole bunch of stocks. Hmm. But somebody's in charge who decides when to buy and when to sell.
Oh.
And they pay that guy really well, like $1 million a year. But then you go back and you say, wait a minute, what if I just bought all the stocks, a small portion? What if I bought the Dow 30 or I bought the S&P 500? Mm-hmm. Okay. Does that manager picking those individual stocks, does he do better than if I just bought the whole market? And you'll find out that no, he doesn't. He gets paid $1 million a year, but he doesn't. So the simple thing is just put money in all 500 stocks and you will outperform all those 10,000 managers over, pick a 5 years maybe.
Well, okay. So the S&P 500 is something that I can invest in right now on my phone. I can buy $100 worth. Is that a mutual fund?
Yes.
So when I go on Robinhood and I buy $300 worth of the S&P 500, I know I'm phrasing this wrong.
No, that's fine.
$300 shares of the S&P 500, which is like the average of the top 500 businesses in America, right? Or something like that?
It's not really the top, but it's the big 500, yes.
Okay, so at that point, I have invested in a mutual fund.
And you've invested a few pennies in each of those 500 stocks.
That's interesting.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Huh. All right, and if you would just let that go, don't panic and sell out when everything looks bad. You know, just let it, keep putting money and let it go. You'll come out fine at the end.
I've heard that Warren Buffett says it's not timing the market. It's not timing when you go in, when you pull out, this type of thing. It's time in the market. So if you just stay in the S&P 500, which is more or less the pulse of the United States economy.
Yeah.
I mean, if you just stay in it for the long run, it always seems to go up.
Well, I don't know if you saw, but he also said when he dies, his widow should just put her money in an S&P 500 index fund.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's a pretty sharp guy.
So that's all very interesting. Maybe we'll talk more about finance as we go on with this. But I am also curious, are you interested in any other periods of time in history, not just the past few centuries pertaining to this area, but other regions, other time periods? Do any others catch your interest? Or is it mostly just the history of Central Illinois and Fairbury?
I'm pretty good after watching the History Channel. I'm pretty good on World War II.
Hmm.
I'm pretty good on World War I. I did a book about Fairbury. Well, I did the Civil War too on that side. So on the war side, I would say Civil War, World War I, World War II. But where I really focus is the local area.
Yeah.
So I tell this story. A couple years ago, they were digging a foundation in London. And they found some bones and a sword. And they thought it was this certain king. So they start checking. If I remember right, they track down a descendant 22 generations later, living today. Took his DNA, was able to get some off the bones and got a match. Hmm. 22 generations. So Fairbury's only 7 or 9 generations. So I'm much happier studying Fairbury than I am London.
Yeah.
Okay. Just to give you an idea, we're relatively new here.
Yes. Oh, no kidding. Yeah.
And then you start looking at Native Americans. Best guess is somewhere around 10,000 years ago. They think they came across on the Alaskan Strait.
When that land bridge?
Yes. Across
Very
there.
Very interesting.
About 10,000 years ago. And I forget, that's 250 generations or something like that.
That's so interesting. I love talking about the Native Americans. So just to, like, maybe we can talk about this for a second. So my name's Paul Lorenzo Garcia. I am of Mexican descent.
Okay.
So, but if I've had a 23andMe test, genealogy test, and it says I am 33% Native American. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. You'd think it'd say Mexican. This is probably old news to you, but the Mexican people, I mean, throughout the Americas originally, there was just Native Americans throughout what is now Mexico, the United States, and even Canada, Native Americans. And then the 1850s is when they slapped on that Mexican border, and everyone south of that, those Native Americans were called Mexicans.
Right.
Mexicans are Native Americans.
Yes.
So interesting.
Well, you've got the mound builders down at Cahokia.
Cahokia?
Yes. There's that's one of the largest mounds in North America. But you also have the Mexican ones down southeast of Mexico City. Mm-hmm. I forget the names of those, but there's a whole bunch of those. Well, they're, like you say, they were all one culture all the way through there. Yes. So that doesn't surprise me that you came back Native American.
I love that. It's so cool. Yeah. And if you ever, it doesn't take a genius to look at Mexican people and then look at Native American people and be like, these guys look similar.
Yeah.
Dark hair, brown skin.
Right.
And some of them have like the almondy shaped eyes. I think it's so fascinating. And I kind of have to watch what I talk about these days because you say the wrong thing, it can come off racist. But, you know, I'm not too worried
about
it.
Well, in this area, the Kickapoo. Well, the other, you go back and try to figure out these different tribes and things. Mm-hmm. I think before the white man got here, they were always on the move. And I mean what we would consider state-to-state moves, all the way from, say, Ohio to Illinois, Missouri. Not sure why they kept moving around all the time. But then when as white Europeans started coming in, that forced them to move some more, too. So trying to figure out where these tribes were at, and it's really almost impossible. Uh-huh. You have to look at what time period. But back when Fairbury got started, the Kickapoo were here.
And the Kickapoo.
And if I pronounce it right, Potawatomis.
So there, are you saying there were Indians in this area? Because when was Fairbury founded? The 1860s?
Well, 1857, but the first guy came here in 1830.
Okay.
South of town. So the Kickapoo came up, I think, from the Leroy area, a little bit south of here. And they settled about 3.5 miles south of Fairbury on Indian Creek. That's why it's named Indian Creek. So they lived there about 2 years. So when the first white people were showing up, they're just moving. But they had interactions with them. In fact, they supposedly gave the first settlers some beans they had. And it was a really rough winter. They might not have made it through the winter if they didn't have that for food. Hmm. And then Spence family went back just, I don't know, 10 years ago or so. The Kickapoo gave some of those beans back to the Spence family, and they regrew them down here just like 10 years ago.
Wow.
And anyway, they moved. Don't ask me why. They moved about 10 miles straight east south of Chatsworth. And that was called Oliver's Grove. They lived there 2 years, and then we had the Black Hawk War, which was only lasted 5 months, and Chief Black Hawk lost. When he lost, all the Native Americans were forced to leave the state. So they spent 2 years south of town here, 2 years south of Chatsworth, and then out of the state.
This group of Indian people, Native American people, they were just kind of getting pushed and pushed. And the Black Hawk War, that was a war between Native Americans and settlers?
Yes.
And what year was that?
1832.
Okay, it's so interesting. Yes. I'm puzzled. What do you think that those altercations and the communication between, like, what do you think it looked like when the first European settlers in the 1830s came to this area, saw these people, and I'll say maybe they were in huts or something like that. What do you think those first moments of communication were like, the greetings?
Well, first of all, you have to remember, this was swampland. Okay. What wasn't swamp was prairie grass, okay? And this was the last part of the Illinois to be settled. Mm-hmm. Everybody came southern Illinois first because of the Ohio River access. And then they came in Chicago on Lake Michigan up that end. So if you look, central Illinois is the last part of the state.
They were just coming like this, and then one really cared about what was in here for a while.
A long time, because it was swampland.
Yeah.
And but as far as I can tell, there was no bad interactions here in those first years. I'm writing a new book about Franklin Oliver from Chatsworth, and he showed up, and I think they were just going to camp for the night and keep going west. Well, next thing you know, he's surrounded by Kickapoo Indians. And the story goes, they offered him to smoke a peace pipe, and he said in his later years he normally didn't smoke, but that was one time he was glad he made an exception.
Yeah.
And they liked him, and the Black Hawk War started. So there was like 15 or 20 other settlers in the area. So the chief said to this Oliver, he says, you might want to tell your buddies that maybe they want to go to Indiana for a couple of months till it cools down. So they actually got their wagons loaded up, went to Indiana for a couple months. Oliver stayed with his Indian friends, the Kickapoo. The war ended.
So fascinating.
The war ended, and they came back. And like I say, they got forced to leave the state then. But Oliver stayed in that area, became Oliver's Grove.
I see. On that. Is our knowledge of the history of Native Americans fairly limited? Because to my knowledge, I don't know that they wrote much.
We are brought to you by Connections of Fairview Haven. COVID-19 is a crazy thing, and while a lot of us younger folks aren't too worried about it, those of us who are more at risk, namely the elderly and otherwise immune compromised, definitely are worried about it. They, or perhaps you, are trying to limit social interactions and keep public exposure to a minimum. Some of us also just have a hard time moving around. These circumstances can all, obviously, make everyday tasks like getting groceries, picking up medication, going to the salon, and running basic errands pretty darn hard and stressful to do, and that's where my friends at Connections of Fairview Haven come in. Connections of Fairview Haven is a licensed home service agency. Their team provides tons of different non-medical services for you, all in the comfort and safety of your own home. They will literally come to you or your loved one's place of residence and help with any services that you or they may need, like running errands, meal preparation, transportation, assistance with bathing, medication reminders, skin, oral, and hair care, and even just friendly conversation. They've also partnered with some local businesses to provide other services like therapy, yard work, home repairs, etc. They've got you covered on all fronts. Connections of Fairview Haven takes all the worry out of daily living and empowers you to continue to live an abundant life your way. This program is servicing Livingston County, Iroquois County, and Ford County, and they can start working for you right now with as little as one phone call to 815-692-6703. Fairview Haven is an incredible place, and this new service agency is remarkable as well. Connections of Fairview Haven. They're putting the gold back into the golden years.
Knowledge. I don't know that they wrote much as much as the Europeans did.
You are correct.
Wow, that's kind of sad. That's a bummer. Well,
what's even sadder than that, though, is you go, so remember, they've been here 10,000 years. We're only talking about the tail end of the 10,000 years.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
So there's almost no records. So the only thing left is what they find for artifacts, arrowheads and tools and that type of thing. And if you talk to the experts, they can look at artifacts, and they've kind of divvied it up. I think it's four different time periods. And they can even tell you within that 10,000 years which time period it was.
Yeah.
But you're right. They were pretty limited. The only written things we have are what white people wrote down.
Yeah.
Like when who was it? Father Joliet, Louis Joliet, came here early. He made logs of what he, in his interactions that he had. What's that saying? The victor writes the history writes the story. Well, that's the case here. I'd say we're really limited. There's a case I found where a guy got captured, and they kept him hostage for, 3 or 4 months or 6 months. They basically just moved around a lot, hunted, and finally somebody agreed to trade and free him, and he got released. So then he wrote up a log of what happened during that time period.
Jeez.
But you're kind of in a weird state anyway, because you've got the white man here. You know, we broke every treaty we ever made to sum it all up. Mm-hmm. So, that's the only account I found was that... in this Illinois area where that guy He came out okay. They didn't really abuse him. Mm-hmm. There was another guy.
Well, I've heard they were savages. That's terrible to say. Like, they scalped people and stuff, though, right?
Well, I don't know about that in Illinois so much.
I might cut that part out.
There was another gentleman, and I did a Blade story about him. I just haven't published it yet, where he just signed up in the military, and the first week he gets captured. He was physically abused, and they held him hostage for a long time, like a year, and moved him around, and they finally released him. Well, he went back and found his commanding officer and got paid. But then years later, the government granted a pension. Well, he's trying to collect the pension. There's no records because he was a POW that whole time. It took an act of Congress and about 10 years for him to finally get his pension. And he's the father of the woman who was the Darnells that first came here. So there's actually a tie into that story to Fairbury. So
interesting.
Yeah.
So when I think of Central Illinois, specifically the towns that neighbor this area and this town of Fairbury, I think of places like Shenoah, Pontiac, Kickapoo, even down by Peoria. These are obviously Native American sounding names.
Yeah.
Are we naming these towns, or did we name these towns after the tribes that used to be there? Or how did that work? Do you know?
A lot of those are tied into Indian names. So
wow.
This Oliver guy I was telling you about from Chatsworth, he was buddies with him. So he named, he surveyed Sonoman, and one of the chiefs was named Sonoman. So he called that Sonoman. So my problem, well, I did a separate book just about Native Americans in this area. My problem was trying to whittle that down because, just as you said, we're all tied with all these other communities. Where do you, Starved Rock's not that far away.
Right.
And you got all that activity. There was a huge battle down by Leroy and Mackinac down there one time. So I had a hard time separating it. Just boil it down to here, in my case, Chatsworth with the Kickapoo. But, yeah, it's so intermarried all up that Chicago, I believe that's an Indian name, too.
Chicago?
Yes, I think so.
Man, I believe it.
I think so. Oh, there's a whole bunch of them.
Holy cow. Man, that'd be such an interesting time to go back to. Mainly
because I often wish I could get in the time machine and go back and just see. And I remember somebody was telling me, oh, if I could just go back to Fairbury, say, in the 1880s. I said, the first thing you notice when you get out of your time machine was how bad it smelled.
I think that, no, I'm right there with you.
Because the horses that were in here, the streets were full of horse manure.
You know, okay.
Yes, and dirt mixed together.
I mean, plus people didn't shower either.
I think that'd be minor compared to the horse manure. Yeah, that would be minor. And even farther, go back in the glacier period and see. I'm not a geologist, so I still don't quite understand. But my understanding is there's at least three glaciers came and went. Clear down to almost southern Illinois.
Yeah.
So
I wanted to ask you about by the way.
All these berms or banks that you find are typically going to run east-west, not north-south, because the glacier's going back and forth.
Wow.
So when they stopped, that's where they would deposit, or all the rocks they've been pushing are all left there too. And then it grinds up and makes gravel, and that's why we find gravel in a lot of areas around here too.
I always wonder how the ice, those glaciers moved. But then I think about how if you had a wood table, you could say, you set an ice cube down, as that ice cube melts, it kind of slides across the table. I wonder if it's anything like that.
Well, it's just it's almost like you could think of it as a liquid form. And my understanding is some of those are almost a mile high, like 5,000 feet high. So there's kind of something that big probably wants to spread out.
Yeah.
And it was getting added on the most with more snow at the north in Canada. So that probably just caused it to push on through.
And maybe kind of settle into the central Illinois area, into the middle of this great big landmass we call North America. Would that make sense for it to kind of come down to the center and then just hang out here and really flatten out the land and drop a bunch of...
But I think it hit the warmer weather, like southern Illinois.
Oh, yeah.
And they didn't really go past that, to my understanding.
Oh.
Then if you want to really hurt your brain, go up to Galena sometime.
Yeah.
there's a whole area there in that corner of the state in Wisconsin, the glacier skipped. Don't ask me why they skipped. They actually went around.
Is it almost like, it's like really hilly up in Galena?
Yes.
And that's so strange.
And that's why they found lead up there too. They said if the glacier had wiped that out, that you'd never find lead up there.
Hmm.
That's one of the earliest places they mined lead was up in that Galena area. And I still don't understand why didn't the glacier just wipe that off the map? I don't know.
So it's fair to say, though, that the reason this Prairie Central area is just flat and you can see forever is because of those big old glaciers flattening it all out,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And then the glaciers dropping all that nutrients to the soil, you know, picking up all these dead animals, all these trees, this, you know, vegetation, and then melting here and it dropped it all on the soil. That's probably why our soil's like some of the best in the world, right?
Well, you're going to have to take your history back some more, though. One time we were a tropical forest here.
Oh, my gosh.
Another time. And that's why all that dead trees and plants and stuff all got layered up and compacted. Well, that's where there's coal underneath all of Illinois, more or less. One time we were under the ocean.
So yeah, my brother
Brad can go on his farm outside of town and he can find a fossil that's a seashell. So how does the seashell get in central Illinois?
Man.
Well, because so many million years ago, we were under an ocean. So I had to go back. I don't know if I learned that in junior high and I forgot it as an adult, but I had to go back. And one of my books talks about not just Native Americans, but it goes clear back to the glacier period.
Yeah.
And explains why we find gravel here, limestone, why we find coal here and oil in southern Illinois.
So you talked about coal. We could talk about the coal mines in Fairbury. Yeah. That was a huge part of why Fairbury ever became, you know, maybe more populated. I know,
it
but it wasn't at the beginning. That's not why Fairbury was founded, right?
No, the railroad came through.
So that's why Fairbury even exists.
That's why it exists. There's already a town here out north of town at Avoca.
Avoca?
Avoca.
Avoca. Okay. Is that still a town?
No. Okay. A cemetery left, so all it's left. But at one time, it was a small town. I even have a map with the street names on it.
Wow.
And it had houses, and it had a church and a cemetery. Well, as soon as the railroad came through, Fairbury was established. Very quickly, they even moved some of the houses. This is 1857. They had to use horses. They moved the houses from Avoca, which is 3 or 4 miles, I think, north, moved them into town.
How did they move them?
I don't know what they used for wheels then. But they used horses to pull them, obviously. I'm not sure what they used. Probably maybe wagon wheels, smaller ones.
Wow.
Somebody made a YouTube video just a couple years ago down, I think at Arthur or somewhere down there. It was the Amish. They were moving a church. So they got it all jacked up, but they set it on modern tires.
Mm-hmm.
And they had an 18-wheeler pulling it, and they got close to town. And they stopped and pulled the 18-wheeler off. They got a team of horses. I forget. A lot of horses.
Uh-huh.
Hooked them up just for a demonstration. Well, they had to go about 5 times, you know, just kind of starting and pulling, you know, how hard it is to get something moving like that. And finally, they got it going. And they took off and went a couple blocks just for people to photograph it and film it. But they got it moving and they moved the house. So I guess as long as you had wheels back then, horses, you could move it.
That's incredible. Yeah. So Fairbury, was it basically a place along the railroad that people could stop because you needed to stop every so often?
Well, yeah. In those days, you'd have to take on fuel and water in there. And these father and son, Marshes, came over from Washington. And I think they saw an opportunity. And they bought land. They set up some of the first subdivisions within Fairbury. And then the father was kind of an amateur geologist, and he thought there was coal here. Everybody here told me they're nuts because the only coal that had been found was over on the Mississippi River. So he had a geologist, Fred, come out from the East Coast and look around. And now to me, Pennsylvania, and it's got a lot of coal under it, and it's kind of hilly. You know, not flat like here, but who's to say there's not coal under here? But mm-hmm. geologist guy kind of said, I don't know, go for it. Mm-hmm. So they dug out west of town, and they had a heck of a time of water because we have a high water table. And they finally got down, and they found about a 5 foot thick seam of coal down there. Well, once that was found here, that triggered all the towns in central Illinois. I've got Pantograph articles complaining, well, how's come little Fairbury can have coal and we don't have any? We need to get a coal mine right away. And it set off a mining boom all around central Illinois. We had about 5 mines. I don't know if they're all operating at the same time. We had the longest running one.
Out by Timber Ridge, right?
Timber Ridge ran clear up to 1941 up there, that one. The one out on, when I was a kid, it was called Shaft Hill, out about 9th Street in that area. And there's still a small hill there. I think that closed like 1913.
You said you've talked to some people that are, of course, still around today that said that they used to dump their trash down that one by when they
were
Timber Ridge, right?
Timber Ridge, when they were kids, man, yes.
I wonder, so are there mines underneath Fairbury right now? Could Fairbury go down at the next earthquake? Because it's so undermined.
So, all right, so all these ones in Fairbury are 180 to 200 feet deep.
Ah.
Okay, and you've taken out a 5 foot section, and you've left pillars of coal in place to support the ceiling. So the odds of anything ever really coming down are about nil, I would say. On that side, there's we don't have any tunnel maps except for Timber Ridge. And then Timber Ridge, there are no tunnels under what we think of as Timber Ridge subdivision. They are under the golf course.
Ooh.
In fact, one of them ends not that far from the country club. And then they keep on that side of the street, the west side of that street. They go clear up to where the houses are up there. Then that empty field that's south of the cemetery, that was all tunnels in that area. Not the cemetery itself, but the field that's to the south.
Very interesting.
Yeah, it was that side. Here, there was a mine where the Honinger old mill sits over there.
Uh-huh.
I doubt they got this far, but there are some probably between here and there. There's probably some there. That one on east side of town, yeah, there would be houses there too. That one wasn't that big, but yeah, there's tunnels. But to me, I think it's a non-event because they're so deep and they weren't that. They're 180 foot deep and they're only 5 foot and they left pillars to support them. Mm-hmm. So I haven't found a substantiated case of something settling in town.
Right. Didn't some railroad tie go down like a foot one time?
I think that's baloney. Yeah.
Really?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. I thought that was a true story. Like the railroad
you don't want to
dip down a
everything
foot.
You read.
Yeah. I was going to say, yeah, and you're going, 40 miles an hour on a train or whatever, and you hit a foot dip, that could really change things.
I doubt that anything to do with a coal mine. It's 180 foot down. No.
Yeah.
No.
Well, very interesting. So Fairbury got its start mostly because of the railroad coming through.
Yes.
And then it got its claim to fame with the coal mines. Like people started really coming in for that.
That and then they obviously agriculture took off. So the farmers needed a place to bring their crops to plus buy supplies. So that's when the young Mr. Isaac Walton came to town and set up his department store.
Walton Center named after him?
Yeah.
Okay.
And he called for his brother to come out. And they just had a knack for business. Mm. So they set up down at the west end of Main Street first. And then we had a lot of fires. So that one got burned up. So then they moved to the current location. And then that one got burned up too.
These were in the days before there were like fire hydrants and the fire crew could come and just hook up to the nearest fire hydrant and just blast water. Right. These were in the days of buckets, right?
Yeah,
the
buckets.
Great Chicago fires type stuff.
At some point, I don't remember if I know what year it was, but what they did, they dug holes in each block, like a holding tank, and then they ran a pipe to the next one. I forget, I have all the data, but they would have not that much, 500 or 1,000 gallons in each one. Then if you tapped into one of them, and they had hand pump hose carts. Mm-hmm. You tapped into one, in theory, the water would keep from all of them would feed you to do that. But still, that wasn't much water. And those hand pumper things, they don't put out much water either.
Right.
Yeah. So
probably wasn't much power behind the water either. So if it's on the second story.
You're literally manpower. Some of them had like three men to a side. So you'd have six of them.
Oh, yeah. Pumping. Just get the strong guys like push, pull. Well, like,
can you imagine doing that all night for a fire?
Yeah.
Yeah, that got... Town going, Walton's was a main store. Lots of taverns.
Yeah, for coal miners.
I'm sure. Yes.
Big part of the culture.
Although some of the data I see, though, says that was more of a seasonal job, that the wintertime is when the people burnt coal for heat. Mm. Now, the railroad used it year-round, okay, but there's been a lot of cases I've read about miners here that they only worked in the mines in the winter. They went and found another job in the summer.
My grandpa used to say that there was a lot of trouble in the taverns here because there were so many people, but they wouldn't serve miners. Get it?
Well, there was a problem with alcoholism.
Was there?
We are brought to you by Forest Edge Tree Service. If you have trees or tree stumps on your property that you want gone, go nowhere else but Livingston County's premier tree service provider, Forest Edge Tree Service. This winter has been tough on all of our trees, and it's definitely caused tons of lasting damage. All it takes now is a little strong wind to lead to downed trees, limbs, and power lines, potentially resulting in massive damage to your homes, cars, and properties. Face it, your yard is no place for looming dead or damaged trees. It's just a matter of time before one comes down, and whether by your choice or not. This is precisely why you need to be a responsible adult and hire the services of Forest Edge Tree Service. Simply give Joe Rudin a call or text at 815-615-3037 to get a free quote today and prevent the property damage, financial distress, and all the other bad stuff that comes with unplanned downed trees. Take care of the problem before it's a problem. Forest Edge Tree Service is staffed with trained professionals who use cutting-edge equipment to get the job done right every time. But if somehow, by some one-in-a-million chance, something went wrong, they are fully insured, so hiring their services is truly risk-free. These experienced pros take pride in their attention to detail, in their cleanup, and in their relationships with customers, which is why they are Livingston County's premier tree service provider. Keep your family, pets, vehicles, and neighbors safe and save yourself a world of headaches when you call or text Forest Edge Tree Service at 815-615-3037 to get those dangerous, looming, dead, troublesome accidents waiting to happen off of your property. That's Forest Edge Tree Service. Call or text them at 815-615-3037.
There was a problem with alcoholism.
Was there?
Oh, yeah. And there was several temperance movements. You know what I mean by temperance? Anti-alcohol.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah. The prohibition back in the day.
Yeah, they were called temperance movements. And Fairbury had their fair share of those, usually organized by the ladies in the church.
Yes, I wanted to talk about that.
And then they were the doctors and the ministers would support it because they would see the bad effects on the families.
Mm-hmm.
Where dad's turned into an alcoholic. Sure, he can't provide for the family. It wasn't really that accepted for the woman to be working like it is today. If I remember right, women got the right to vote about the same time that prohibition came in on a federal level. Mm. We actually voted to go dry here as the city of Fairbury. About
not surprised, really.
No, 1900, 1910, one of those. We went dry for a couple of years, and then we voted to go back wet. Mm-hmm. Then, unfortunately, after being dry 2 years, they opened the taverns back up, and one young man spent all day in the taverns, and he leaves the tavern on Main Street and runs into a young lady, and she's walking to the train station to mail a letter. I don't know. He got into an argument with her and told him that he was going home and get his gun. So she run into the city marshal and said, "Hey, I don't know about this guy. He acts like he's drunk and he's going home to get a gun." And the city marshal says, "Well, I'll tell you what, I'll just walk you home." So they started down Main Street West and had to turn at First Street. She lived a few blocks south. Well, they got the end of Main Street. Here pops the guy up. He gets in a tussle with the city marshal, shoots and kills him. Takes off running down First Street over the tracks, comes to the girl who isn't quite home yet, and tells her that, yep, he shot him. And she says the last thing she saw, he was running west. Mm. Well, they put out a national hunt. They even made posters, murder wanted posters for him. They had sightings around the United States. The county sheriff would send somebody to go check. They never did find him.
Holy mackerel.
But the one interesting thing was, so that was around 1910. About 1940, they reprinted the high school football team picture in the Blade. And somebody went through and identified what happened to each person. And it was pretty cool. There was actually two blacks guys playing on that team. There was only like 10 guys.
In 1940?
No, 10.
1910?
Yeah.
What? I thought schools were segregated.
They were, but there was only two on the team. There's only 10 guys on the team, so there was two.
Two black guys.
Two blacks.
In 1910.
In 1910. I don't find that unusual. That's the population was probably 100 out of 3,000.
Right, but I didn't think there were interracial sports teams at the time.
Oh, yeah.
Apparently, I'm wrong.
Oh, no, they're all integrated from...
In 1863, it was only in 1863 that the Emancipation Proclamation became a thing.
Well, yeah.
It was that short after that?
That's southern states, so the northern states were...
Were already
integrated.
I didn't know that.
Well, the cemeteries...
I don't claim to be a history major here, you know?
Cemeteries integrated out there.
Okay.
The oldest part's along 7th Street on the south end. And there's several black people buried out there as well. The schools were all integrated.
Oh.
It sounded a whole lot different than today.
Very interesting.
From that point of view. But anyway, what's interesting, somebody, I don't know who it was, they went through and said, well, this is what happened to Joe and Jack and whatever. They got to the guy that did the murder that never was caught. And they said, yeah, he died a couple years ago. Well, how did he know? How did he know he died?
Well, did you get an answer?
No. And it was funny. I was at Diner 24 here last week, and some guy says, "Boy, Dale, I like that Blade article you did about that case." And the house we live in was the house that that guy lived in with his family at that time, out south of town. And I said, "Yeah, I just know it's south of town. I don't know which house it is." He says, "Yeah, it's one we live in."
So, that's a fascinating story right there.
Oh, yeah.
And before we move on, I want to just ask a couple of things. So you talk about, let's think about Lost in Time, a restaurant that people love. They come from far and wide to come to that restaurant here in Fairbury. It's a fantastic place. They're not sponsoring the show either. This is a free shout out. But something that I've read, and I think they might have this on their menu, the different businesses that have... been in what is now Lost in Time in that building.
Correct.
One of them includes like Ladies of the Night or something like that. And it was a brothel, a prostitution place, right?
Upstairs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a thing here in Fairbury, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Do you know about when that was? Was that around the time that the Prohibition was starting or maybe ending? That amazes me that was a thing in this religious community.
Well, yeah, but now Alma Lewis James wrote the one history book about Fairbury. Mm-hmm. And I always credit her with not having computers and being able to write that book. But on the other side of the coin, she likes to embellish some things. So in her book, she says there were 62 registered houses of prostitution in town.
62
registered. So I,
being
the engineer, I'm going to say, okay, how many unregistered were there?
Of course.
So I had somebody, I put that on Facebook one
good
time.
Good heavens.
Some Pontiac guy comes and says, well, you need to find out where they're at and then have a map and have a walking tour. Uh-huh. And so I went back to the lady who works for the city at the time, and she has all the city records. I said, was there ever a record of the what do you want to call it, prostitution or whatever? Mm-hmm. And she says, nope. She says, I don't know if that's true or not.
Oh, that's very interesting. Who was the woman that wrote that book?
Alma Lewis James.
Is she still around?
No.
Oh, bummer.
No, she died, I think, about 70, somewhere 74 to 78. Yes.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Well, that's fascinating.
But Yeah, well, she likes to embellish her story.
Make a story interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't do that. I'm an engineer, so I pretty much...
You're cut and dry, right?
Yeah, I'm cut and dry. I find it in the newspaper. I'm going to put it in there. And the exact words, it's in the newspaper. I'm not going to edit it or anything else. And it's fun to read the way they did language, too, sometimes in those articles. And then I may comment on it, you know, if there's a mystery or something to it. But, yeah, so mine aren't probably as interesting as her stories, but be it may. Somebody could come 50 years from now, and I think they'd find all my stuff's accurate to the source and what my source was.
That's a quality journalist right there.
Well, yeah.
Facts. Before we move on, I want to ask you a couple more random questions. Forest. So you said that Fairbury was made primarily as a resting, or as a stopping point maybe for, in a stopping point and a recharging, refueling place for the railroad, trains on the railroad.
Yeah. But people immediately set up hotels and businesses in town, too, to make it a town.
Yes. But the town of Forest, I've heard that, so everyone's always like, thinks it's spelled with one R. It's spelled with two R's.
Yeah.
I've heard that it was made that way, and they decided on the spelling like that, because it was a town that was for rest. Is that, you ever heard of that? Is that another blown
thing? If I remember right, it was first called Forestville.
Forestville?
And then shortened to Forest.
Huh. Well, why the two R's?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
The mystery continues.
You're going to ask me, if you ask me why Sunken Park's sunken, I'm going to tell you nobody knows.
Yeah.
My theory is the railroad excavated that, and also what today is Veterans Memorial Park or Central Park. That was actually sunken too. So I think they excavated both to get their railroad nice and flat.
Interesting.
Then we filled in, volunteers filled in the Central Park one between the post office and Old City Hall.
Mm-hmm.
They filled that in and made it a park.
I see.
So nobody ever filled in Sunken Park.
Huh. They just didn't get around to it, huh?
No,
like,
so
let's just leave it sunken.
Yeah. So that's cool. My theory that was done when the railroad first came through. So go ahead.
Yes. And the other question was, and this might be a whole subject that we go into now, and it is that this is what's unique about Fairbury, I think anyways, is it's obviously a rural town, but it has unique characteristics about it that aren't typical in other very rural farm towns. I mean, it's a highly religious community for one, but it's not just one religion. We have like 10 different denominations and churches in this small town of Fairbury alone. And also, this area is, I think, it's a rather intelligent area. There's a lot of professional people engineers like yourself that come from this area. Prairie Central tests really high for public small schools in the area and in Illinois. Like, we're competitive with U-High, which is a private school in a bigger city area.
Mm-hmm.
So it's unique in that way. So we're really studious. And we're very religious. And I'm curious, what were some of the first religions, do you think, in this area? It's like a hotbed for the apostolic Christian community. Of course, there's a Catholic church here, Baptist, Lutheran, Methodist, and so on.
You're hurting my memory banks here. But I think right away, after the town was founded, the Presbyterians, the Methodists, I think, were already set up a voca, and they came to town. So Presbyterians, Methodists. Catholics weren't far behind.
Right.
And then you threw in a Baptist one as well early on. Then the ACs were later.
Oh, were they later?
Yeah.
Thinking that they'd be pretty early on.
No, they were. Most of those people didn't come over from Europe till later.
Right.
And by later, I don't know.
Well,
I'm going to say more like 1880s and 1890s.
I guess all of those Protestant denominations, I mean, they only came about after 1516. So they didn't have, a lot of them probably weren't even in existence until the 1800s. Because everyone was basically Catholic or Eastern Orthodox from the time of Jesus until 1516 and Martin Luther split them all up, and then 30,000 denominations came about.
So there was, I mean, within 5 years, there was probably five different churches here. And we had a black church.
Did we really?
Yes. Abbreviated as AME, which is African Methodist Episcopal. I have trouble pronouncing that one.
Mm-hmm. That's a tough one to say.
They had a, we maxed out about 100, according to the census. around 1900, if I remember right. So they set their own church up. Kitty corner from Dave's supermarket, to the south and to the west. Now, it's not there anymore. It got torn down, best I can figure, about 1968. Now, there's a little house there down on that corner. But it's on the maps for the town. It's shown. They had a minister, or sometimes they'd share a minister with Pontiac. I ran across two older women that said when they were kids, they loved on Sunday mornings to go walk by that church and just stop and listen to the people sing.
It's still a cultural thing. The black churches, they sing loudly, right?
Yeah,
and energetically.
This one lady says, yeah, my mother told me not to go by that church, but I did pay attention because I like to listen to them. So I just sit outside.
Yeah.
Well, before 68, I think it had declined because there's several guys that had Boy Scout meetings in that building, in that church. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I cannot find a picture of that church. I wish I could find a picture of it.
Yeah.
But I can't. But yeah, that church was there before 1900.
Uh-huh.
Even. It was, if I remember, it was 1885 that church was there.
So wow.
Really early on.
You said there's, what, about 100 black people that went to that church?
No, Matt, a total for Fairbury.
Total for Fairbury, 100 black people?
In the census.
I wonder if that was the percentage of black people in Fairbury was higher then than it is now, because I know now it's not too high.
Yes.
Yeah, that's surprising.
Well, then it kind of...
I hope that's kinda, not indicate, doesn't indicate any bad...
It kind of tapered off. There's one year that something's not quite right with the numbers, but if you look at the other years, it kind of just gradually tapered lower over time. I don't know why. Then there's stories that Mr. Solomon had a farm over what today is Sibley. Mm-hmm. He had 40,000 acres of land, and he had they weren't slaves. They were all paid, but a lot of blacks came up from Tennessee. Well, he went bankrupt, and Mr. Sibley was one of his bankers. So he took over a big chunk of the farm, and that's why it's called Sibley today, not Sullivan, because Sullivan went bankrupt. So that, I think Alma Lewis James claims that a bunch of those guys were out of work, so they came to Fairbury. Well, it does kind of match up timeline-wise with where the peak was, where it hit that 100 or so. So, I mean, that story could be true.
Interesting. And I just want to say, while we're on camera, because our terminology we're talking about these days, I kind of just want to explain. We're saying, like, you know, there are black people, blacks, and I know you probably, this doesn't seem like I even have to say it, but some people might prefer that we say African American or something like that, but that's not the case. I think a lot of white people say that you should say, you know, young white people that are more liberal, more left, say African American or people of color. I just want to say I've looked into the topic, talked to plenty of black people. We should just say black, because it's weird to say African American. That's like calling me a Mexican American. It's like, or why I didn't even come from Mexico.
Why can't I be an Irish American?
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, just, you know, it's not that important. And not all black people are from Africa, so it's kind of weird to say African American and stuff. Right. So anyways, I just want to say that before we continue. So
sure.
In case we get angry comments or anything, you know. So just curious, when it comes to Fairbury, would you say that our prime has already came and went, or, you know, was there a boom and we're kind of on the decline right now, or are our best days yet to come? I know we have the racetrack. Maybe people can hear that going on right now. That brings in a lot of people. That's one of our biggest attractions. We have a good school system, but have we already seen our best days, do you think?
That's a hard one to tell. On the good side of things, I spent a lot of effort the last 5 years improving how things look downtown.
Yes, and you have. You've done a fantastic job.
I didn't make this observation. Someone else did. Said, Dale, I think because the town looks good, it encourages people to start businesses. So during this pandemic, we have filled up most of the empty stores on Main Street. I don't know if you noticed that, but there's quite a few new businesses on Main Street.
Like what?
Well, there's a where the Blade used to be, which would be Second Street. There's on the corner, there's a beauty shop. Beside it is like a gift shop. What used to be the Blade office was empty. Across the street on the corner, I call it the Occident Flower Building because I painted the Occident Flower sign on it, that brick one. That's now a, I don't know what you call
it. It's like an, you get odds and ends things.
Yeah, gifts, yeah. Store
there.
It's pretty
cool. I like
that. Yeah, so if you just go down the street, most of them are getting, are actually occupied, which is good news.
Yeah.
Because I get nervous during the pandemic, everybody's going to go hit the Amazon key to go buy everything, and that wipes out your small business.
Yeah.
So I don't know the answer to your question. I hope that we're either going to stay the same or go up a little bit.
Sure.
But I don't know. With technology, it's hard to say.
There's reason to hope. I know this people in this area love to support local businesses. Mm-hmm. Of course, money talks. You know, if Amazon's just, by and large, way cheaper and way more efficient, they'll probably do that. But they do like supporting local small businesses here.
Right. So we could really use another... I'd say large for Fairbury, a larger employer, you know. We had Honegger's forever. They peaked out at 500 employees at one time. I don't know if you realize that. That's a lot of employees.
That is a lot. Sheesh.
Honegger's. We still have Pittsburgh International out there. We still have that factory. But, you know, I think we could use one or two more. But, boy, with the business climate in the state of Illinois being so bad, it's hard to attract businesses in Illinois. So,
With the taxes and stuff, there's not a whole lot of incentive to start massive businesses in Illinois.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, so we're kind of getting towards the end of this conversation, Dale. It's been fascinating thus far, and it's been very educational. As we wind down, I would like to ask, what do you feel? I'm sure you've watched the news in recent years about this social push to more or less erase certain parts of our history, be it by doing away with certain books that record certain history, taking down statues that symbolize certain parts of history. What do you think about all that? Do you think it's disastrous, or do you think that, you know, maybe it's permissible?
Well, when you came today, I showed you I'm putting up a mural of historical item. So I'm on the opposite end of that. I mean, I think we need to have our history and need to understand what went on. I mean,
absolutely.
Hopefully don't repeat the same mistakes over again.
In order to know where you're headed, you have to know where you were.
Yes. So I'm not a fan of tearing down statues or anything else. No, I think that history is important. If you, if you don't know where you've been, it's kind of hard to say where you're going to go.
Yeah, man.
So I stay out of politics. I do my thing. I state the facts, you know, and I try not to distort the facts. And the other thing is, it's really hard to put your mind back in another decade. It's hard. Mm-hmm. Just one decade ago, let alone five decades ago.
Absolutely.
I mean, That's really hard to do. So who's to say that you can do that and make judgments about things that happened 50 years ago? I think you're full of baloney. I mean,
and people tend to look back at people from decades ago and think that they were just evil for the things they said, the things that they promoted, and things like that. But however, that they're probably some of the most moral people of their time. And given the information that they had at the time, they made the best decisions possible and said things that they believed were morally permissible and good. Like one right now, we're driving gas cars. In 30 years, 40 years, I wouldn't be surprised if people driving whatever they're driving at the time look back at us like, how could those people drive gas cars? How insensitive, how terrible of them. But here we are thinking it's absolutely nothing's wrong with it. We're just making decisions based on the environment at this time. So people just like to get on their moral high horse and think that people back in the day weren't nearly as morally sound and knowledgeable as they are today.
Well, you know, we tried electric cars once. They didn't catch on that gasoline did.
What do you mean?
In fact, there were some in Fairbury.
Really?
Yeah, they were battery-powered electric cars early on, like, say, 1910, 1915, in that time frame. There were some in town here as well, but they didn't quite catch on.
Oh, fascinating.
So it's not, it's nothing new. It's just what fits all the requirements at the right time. Yeah, we've been through steam cars, electric cars.
Steam cars, that'd be interesting too.
Yeah. The pioneers or the brave guys, or first adopters maybe is a better term, a new technology, were the doctors. And they still made house calls. So, boy, getting a horse and buggy out and going out in a blizzard to go deliver somebody's baby was not too good of a deal. So they would, and they had the money. So they would buy the newest cars out there, and including steam-powered, electric-powered. Some of them, the car basically came with a mechanic. And he would have to take care of your car every day and tune it up and get it ready to go. You know, I mean, so, yeah, I find that kind of fascinating that they tried all those different types of cars. Stanley steamers, they were steam engine cars.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, yeah. As I say, if you don't know your history, you know, it's hard to make decisions or make comments about things that you don't even realize has been gone through once before. You know?
That's, in order to make informed, knowledgeable decisions, you have to be informed and knowledgeable about the past.
Right.
You know? Well, this has been absolutely fantastic. I got one more question for you, and it's not about history. It's about you as a man. What's next for you? What are your next endeavors? It seems like you're always busy with something, whether it's helping out rebuild Marsh Park, writing a book, going on the radio, talking about some historical thing. What's next for you?
So I actually have thought about that before, and I think it's genetic. My dad was always doing something on the farm. Mm-hmm. And my brother Brad is the same way as I am.
Incredibly busy.
Always doing something.
Yeah.
So I think it's in our genetics that we have to be doing something. So I've had good health, knock on wood, so I've been able to do projects like Marsh Park and painting 40 feet in the air, painting building advertising signs and stuff like that. So I'm probably going to keep doing those type of things as long as I can at some point. I'm going to try laying brick next week, and I haven't laid brick for 50 years, so that ought to be fun. So I like trying different things, too. So I never thought I could paint a building advertising sign with 10-foot tall letters up 40
Looks
foot
great,
there.
By the way. It really spruces up downtown Fairbury.
Yeah, they do. When I got the first one done and the first big letter done, I got down, and I went across the street and looked, and I thought, darn, that's going to come out nice.
Yeah.
And I was so relieved because – what do you do if it doesn't look nice, you know? So I think I'll probably keep going, and I like doing community stuff too. So, I thought I was done writing history books, and somebody comes along and asks me to write another one. So I'm pretty good at it, so I can keep going. So yeah, I'll probably keep going as long as my health permits.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, Dale, on behalf of everyone who's lived in Fairbury, we really appreciate what you've done for the town, whether it be beautifying it by doing the stuff uptown, doing the stuff at parks, making this mural that you're going to put up in that Munns Nature Preserve out by Westview, whether it's just reading up on and writing about the history of Fairbury, which is fascinating. It's fascinating to read. It's going to be fascinating to release this episode. Thank you very much for coming on to the show. You're a great guy. This has been fascinating. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you. So thank you for coming.
You're welcome. Glad you enjoyed it. Come back and we'll talk again.
All right. All right. Sounds good. Dale Maley, everybody. Okay. That's a wrap.
Okay.
Thanks. That was over an hour. That was extremely good.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Paul Garcia Show. If you enjoy the show, please subscribe on YouTube or like us on Facebook. If you would like to contribute to the production of this show financially, you can do so by becoming a patron on patreon.com/Paul Garcia or by donating on Venmo to The Paul Garcia Show. Until next Sunday, I'm Paul Garcia. Thanks for listening to The Paul Garcia Show. God bless and have a great week.